Well, if you have your Bibles with you, we're going to look at Psalm chapter 3. It's where we're going to really spend most of our time today. I want to give you a little bit of background for what's happening. We touched on this in Sunday school some, and you all may have done that too. But we're at the point in the Bible now where we're going through the different kings that have been chosen to lead the people of Israel. And the most famous king of Israel is King David, and that's where we are right now. If you remember, he's the guy who took his sling and a stone and flung it around his head and killed Goliath and delivered the Israelites. So he got a lot of popularity. Last week we talked about how he was a good friend with Jonathan and the friendship that came about through that. This week in our readings wasn't really pleasant. It was more like a soap opera. I've watched maybe not even half of one soap opera, and I thought, man alive, if this is what, well, I guess it is real life for some people, but this part of the Bible is kind of like a soap opera in some of the things that happen. Just a refresher, David was king, and he was supposed to be doing kingly things, and instead he was lounging around on his roof, sees this woman that is not his wife. But we know from the story that he could see, then her name was Bathsheba, he could see Bathsheba from his rooftop, which means Bathsheba's house was really close to the king's house, which means Bathsheba's husband was very important to the king. To be close to the king, you need to be important. And what happens is this man who was very important and very close to the king ends up dying because of the king's selfishness. Probably could preach a whole, I have a whole sermon on being close to people that hurt you. But in this, God tells David that was wrong, you shouldn't do that, and he actually lost his first, the child that came out of that affair was born, and God took the child. And we can have an ethics panel on why did God do that, and is God mean for taking the child? The really short answer is the child is in heaven, and David was punished for his sin. So there is an affair and there's murder in the kingdom of David. David apologizes, but a little bit later, well, when Nathan comes and confronts him, he says, you are going to have strife in your house the rest of your kingdom, or the rest of your kingship, because you have disobeyed God. And sometimes we like to think that when I decide to give my life to God and say, God, forgive me for everything I've done, which he does, we would like to think that it also comes with a get-out-of-jail-free card. But it does not, unfortunately. That's why the decisions we make every day are very important. Because I might be making a decision right now, think, you know, I really want to do this, it'll be really fun right now, and not see the long-term consequences of it. Even if I decide, which I have, but even when I was doing stupid things and I decided I don't want to do that anymore, this is the way I'm going to live, I still had to deal with the consequences of the decisions that I made. God forgave me instantly. Some of them took me like 5 or 6 years to forgive myself over, which God forgave me instantly. But it still took me a long time to realize that the guilt that I had, I didn't have to beat myself up with all the time. David deals with some of that in this week's story where we're reading the Bible, in the story of Absalom. Can you imagine if your son decided he was going to take over your house and turn everyone against you and then try to kill you? That'd be a bad day. There might be a spanking involved. But Absalom, if you really look at the story and see why did Absalom do what he did, you know, we like to have sympathy for people. You know, if somebody does something really bad, we like to try to find the reason. Let's understand why they did what they did. We do that too much in our country right now, I think. But if you look at Absalom's reasoning for getting him to this point, you'll see that Absalom had a sister that was raped by someone, David's other son. And Absalom said, you're not going to treat my sister like that. And the Bible is silent on what David did about it. It says David was angry. Well, if you do that to one of my children, I'm going to be angry. And, well, the Bible's silent about what David, whether he did or did not do anything. And what's interesting is this sin that occurred in David's house is similar to the sin that David committed. He went to someone, lured them in, and took something that did not belong to him. It was a sexual sin. And David most likely is having flashbacks. Well, now my son's doing it. And how do you, you know, it's really easy when somebody else does something stupid to say, well, this is what I'd do. But when it gets to your own house, David has trouble dealing with what his child has done because he did it too. And so David says that it's silent. He says he was angry. Then for 2 years, Absalom, the brother of this girl that was raped, just burned with anger. Nothing has happened. My sister has been shamed and hurt. And hello. What happens is Absalom decides to take revenge, and he kills Amnon, the guy that does this. It's his half-brother. And through all this, Absalom is exiled. So I just told you a lot of information. But basically, somebody was raped. Her brother said, you're not going to get away with it. And he killed the guy because the king did nothing. And, of course, we know what the punishment for murder is. You know, you have to go to jail. Absalom ran away. And David was really sad. The Bible says repeatedly that David mourned over the actions of his children because his children are messing up. And David mourned over their actions. But David didn't take action a lot of times. It just says he mourned. And sometimes, like I was saying earlier, there are some things that I did that God forgave me instantly but took years for me to forgive myself. Sometimes our guilt prevents us from dealing with issues the way they should be dealt with because I think, well, I'm guilty and I know what needs to happen, but I just can't because I did the same thing. And as a parent or a friend, sometimes we can excuse wrong behavior because we've done it too. Well, I did it too, so therefore it's not. We'll just let it go. I knew a pastor one time who was talking to this. He was counseling a man about his daughter. And he said, well, you know, kids do things. Kids drink and kids have sex and kids do drugs. We'll just pray that she doesn't get pregnant or get put in jail. And what we were hearing was, I did these things and somehow I got through, so we'll just pray that they get through it. Rather than dealing with the, we don't do it so much anymore, but you know what butt dialing is? The reason they were having this counseling session is the daughter had butt dialed her mother, and we hear there's a party, there's alcohol, mom went to get her daughter, and oh my goodness, the world's falling apart. But because of some of that guilt, they didn't deal with the issue. I did it, I feel guilty, so we'll just let this slide too, which is what David does. And the nation sees how the king is acting. David has these things that are going on inside his house, which they're pretty big. But what happens inside of David's house also affects the nation. Like, people are watching how you respond. And David continued to be burdened by guilt, and he didn't take action on this. And so the people around him in his nation started grumbling and murmuring. Absalom does something. There was a wrong. He took action. And now he has to run away. Now, murder is a wrong action. There is a judicial process for going through what David should have done. But what the people of Israel saw was, this king's house is messed up. And here's someone who took a stand. And Absalom says he started going around, and he was mad at his dad. He started going around and raising support for himself. Like, my dad's not doing it. You want somebody that'll lead? I'm the guy. And because of David's inaction on what should have taken place, someone else stepped in to fill the void. The someone else that stepped in was not the person God ordained as king. But the king wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. A whole bunch of ways we can play that out in our lives. When God has asked us to do something, this is what I want you to do. Even when it's difficult, or even when it's not popular, or you know it's going to make someone upset. There are times when we avoid conflict because we don't want to make people upset. Not everybody does that. Some people are like, psh, deal with it. That's what needs to be done. Some of us, though, will make excuses or put off why we're not doing something that needs to happen. And my concern is when we continue to do things like that, we're not doing something. My concern is that somebody else that shouldn't be doing it, but it's not going to sit around anymore, will step in and start to take action. And it made things even worse. In 2 Samuel chapter 15, it said, Absalom started turning the hearts of the people away from the king toward him. So much so that King David packed all of his stuff one night. Somebody said, Absalom's coming for you. Packed all his stuff. Anybody that's with me, let's go. And they fled out the back gate. Which is a bad place for a king, because a king is supposed to be someone who's leading, not fleeing out the back gate. And when we make these decisions in our life, that when we fail to respond or fail to act the way God has asked us to act, or he doesn't even have to send the lightning bolt from the sky and tell us every time, you know, there's a lot of stuff in here that sometimes we sit around and say, Lord, just tell me what to do. I don't know what I should do. Can you teach me? Can you show me? And we're expecting, like a dream, I had this dream. Or we're expecting to hear some big loud voice from heaven. God had given the law. When rape occurs, this is what a king should do. When murder occurs, this is what should happen. It was already here. David had the instructions, but he didn't act on them. Sometimes we wander around and think, well, when God really wants me to do it, he'll tell me. Or if he wants me to know, he'll tell me. And a lot of times what he wants us to know is right here. But my inaction causes problems, whether or not I'm willing to pick it up and dig through and say, all right, I have no idea where to start. I don't even know where to, what's Hezekiah about? You know, we flip open the Bible, I don't even know where to start. The good news is God knows what we need, and he will lead us to it. Second thing is we have Google. Which sounds a little bit unspiritual, but it's the truth. There is no excuse for not being able to find something in the Bible if you need to find it. It's there. When we begin to look to God and do things he asks us to do, he will begin to open the doors, which is where we find David right here in this story of Absalom. He has fled from his son who's trying to kill him. And that's where we come to Psalms chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Say, O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. No kidding. Everybody's out to get him. Many are rising up against me, and many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But possibly what's happening here, and we can connect this. This is one of the few psalms that are directly tied to an event. When David left the king, when he was fleeing out the palace, someone cursed him in the name of God. Like they cursed, like they put a curse on him. And David's soldiers were like, let's kill him. They were saying, there's no hope for you. Your whole family's going to die, blah, blah, blah. And David said, don't touch them, because if God has given them this word, I don't want to come against someone. So when David said, there is no deliverance for him in God, he is actually repeating what he's been told. Other people have told me, there's no hope for you. Unfortunately, there are people in our lives once in a while that will come through and say, I don't know. I remember eighth grade when one of my teachers, Mr. Page, dirtbag, told one of the kids in class, that he was a waste of time. He just ripped him to pieces. Basically said, not basically, he said, you're worthless. I still remember this, and I still think, why didn't you say something? There's no hope for you. You're never going to amount to anything. Sometimes when we hear those things from other people, it cripples us. And if we hear them, especially from our parents, it can sometimes destroy us. But David has a place he looks that's beyond a parent or beyond a baseball coach or a teacher. In verse 3, he says, but you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory, and the one who lifts my head. This is where David turns his attention from everything's falling apart around me, I'm fleeing for my life. He turns his attention and looks up, and he says, but you, O Lord, are a shield about me, which is hard to do when everything's falling apart because we like to grovel. And we like to tell everybody everything that's going wrong in our lives. And we like to feel sorry for ourselves. And we like for other people to feel sorry for us. But the minute that I turn to God and say, but you, I turn my attention away from the negative and start looking toward hope, which causes me to think hope instead of despair. And sometimes hope is a little more difficult to talk about because we don't know. How's it all going to work out? I don't know. Well, didn't God know you were getting into this situation to begin with? Yes. Well, why didn't God stop it from happening? I don't know. Did God cause this to happen? I don't know. And now you're looking to him for hope? Yes. Sometimes people around us will look at us and say, you're crazy. If the God you serve knows everything and can do anything, you're there because he allowed it to happen, which is what this lady said that was cursing him. Your God has abandoned you. And David said, that's not the God that I have served. Because David had a promise from God earlier in his life. He said, I'm going to build a kingdom, and your name will last forever in this kingdom. And there are times, hopefully in our lives, where we can look back and say, I know that when I made a commitment to God, he also made a commitment to me. Sometimes we need to write those down. Does anybody know where I write those down? In the back of my Bible. I tell you all the time because it's important. Sometimes we have to write these promises from God down because there will come times in our lives where we feel like we've been abandoned. And everyone around us is saying, boy, you're in it deep this time. You're not going to get out. But when we turn our attention back to the one who can be our shield and our strength, sometimes our attitude changes. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. I can tell a difference when I've been so busy that I try to get things done and I don't have my, usually it's my morning of, you know, I need to read and pray for a little bit before my day starts. I would tell you that every morning I get up at 6 o'clock and I go straight to my study and I read and pray. And some days I think I am way too busy. I've got to get going. And I miss those times. And it shows up in my day when I don't first turn my attention to my strength and my shield. The rest of the day seems to twirl on. But when I turn my attention, I can say what David said. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. In the midst of all this turmoil, the next few verses are interesting, and I think we're going to end right here. David says, everything's falling apart around me. My life has been threatened. I don't even know if I don't have a place to sleep anymore. And he turns his attention to God and says, but you are my shield. And the following verses say, I laid down and took a nap. That's what it says. I laid down and I slept. And I don't read Hebrew, but I read about Hebrew. And the way these verses start out, they're showing a contrast. This is what's happening, but this is where things seem to be a disaster, but when I have turned my confidence and my focus on God, I can rest, which is not generally the way Ben Muncy works. It's usually, how am I going to fix it? How am I going to fix it? I'm a Mr. Fix-It. I've got to make my list. And it's good to know when there are a whole bunch of promises that God has given us that in the church we call them claiming the promises. I'm like, he said it, I'm going to hold him to it. God, you better be good on your word. If I'm anxious about something and I give that concern to you and say, God, I trust you with this, the Bible says he's going to do a trade. He'll take my worry and he'll give me a peace that's beyond anything I can understand, which is what David says here. My life's falling apart. People are cursing me. I turn my hope to God, and I slept. And sometimes it's nice to rest, even in the midst of a storm. And we begin to ask ourselves, how is that possible? We can see what David did. Things were going on. Some of them were even his own fault. Most of it was his own fault. But he knew that God had forgiven him. God didn't back down from his promise. And he could have his confidence placed in God, and he can rest. My hope for us is that if there are things going on around us that cause us to be unrested, I don't know if I made that word up. There are things that cause me to be unrested. People that hurt other people, whether it's locally or globally, those cause unrest in my spirit. I want to do something about it. It's a good thing I'm not 18 right now. That causes unrest in my body, makes me mad. But I'm one person in Steinsville, Indiana. What can I do about it? And it really, I would like to say that I can just go to sleep. Sometimes I can't because it irritates me. If I have my confidence placed in God, whatever the issue is, when I place my confidence in God, I can be assured that he has not left me. There are things he will ask me to do that I need to obey, but I can know that he has not left me. And what we see from David is that he continued to have his confidence in God, and God restored him to the place that he wanted him. It was messy. It was not fun, and people were hurt. People who disobeyed God were hurt along the way because of their disobedience. But David, after his big mess up, started saying, if this is the way you want me to go, I'll go this way. And God brought him back to the place where he wanted. And my hope for us is that as we continue to look to God, we can have that same rest, which means we have confidence in God. When all is well, I sleep. It is possible for things to be all as well in the midst of a storm when we know who is leading us. That's the story of David and Absalom for this week. If you're able to stand, would you please?